You just do it right on your phone?
Yeah.
Oh, no shit.
This is how we're doing it here today. Right. This is how it goes. 300! This is how the world of this very day works. Because, I mean, this is the way... The way we started it was audio only kind of stuff.
Okay.
Like, and, you know, like the pandemic kind of caused everybody to be able to, like, do virtual instead of doing it in person.
Yeah.
Because we weren't allowed to be around people.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I started adapting to the world that we were in, just like everybody else.
Okay.
But
you like to go back to...
Sometimes I like to take it back to the original.
Oh, that's awesome.
So... Is that thunder? Do you hear?
That is. It's supposed to rain pretty bad tonight.
So, how many times now have you been on the podcast?
I guess this is 4, right? Okay.
And have the every other time been like this?
No. We did video at least twice.
Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. The one time it was like this, or at least, you know, just microphone, maybe no cameras.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So
we definitely did, because you have reserved the 100th, every 100th episode.
Right.
That you've been like, stamped it. That's mine. Don't give anybody else the 100th episode.
Right. Exactly.
So, see you in 100 more.
Exactly. That's my spot. Every 100th.
I love it. I love that you took such a like passionate stance about don't let anybody else.
That's right.
Don't let
you me. Almost gave it to your mom. And I said no.
You know what? If you were thinking about doing anything for your mom, don't. Don't do anything for her. Do it for me.
Yeah, so.
I just recently asked my mom to do another episode, and she was like, "What number are you on now?" And I was like, 300. She's like, "Give me 322." And I was like, "All right." She's like, "That'll give me a couple months or something, probably."
Like, no, I do like one of these a week or two a week.
Sometimes three. Sometimes 3 a week.
Yeah.
If you want to tell yourself that, you want to go ahead and tell yourself that, go right ahead.
She's buying herself some time. Well, no, I think that I like to be a part of everyone's celebration, you know? Mm-hmm. And to me, hundreds are always celebrated. You know, it's the 100th anniversary. It's the 100th episode.
Yeah.
You're the 100th customer, whatever.
The 300th caller.
Yeah, yeah.
or like the 300th customer who gets in line and all the confetti goes.
Yes, exactly. I like being a part of everyone's, celebration. So that's why I want to be that 100th each time.
I'm down with it, man. I mean, I'm fully happy to facilitate that for you in any way, because so many times you facilitated some things for me.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how much fun I've had on some of the stuff we've done together, and how much importance that stuff has had, and like my growth and my positive change.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't argue with you on that.
Yeah. I've had a much more positive view of everything lately too.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, I have always tried to be not always successful, but I've always tried to be glass half full.
Mm-hmm.
What positive came out of any situation, so on and so forth, but more so than that, even lately, it's like, it's literally a waste of time to be negative and say negative things. And it's just like, did it did it help at all to complain about whatever it was? Mm-hmm. You know, somebody almost hit you with a shopping cart at Walmart, mm-hmm. but did they?
Right.
Seriously.
Is it true?
And even if they did, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say you did get hit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you get hurt? Mm-hmm. Do you now have a story to tell at a party?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that you got hit by a cart, a random cart that, you know, was a... I'll take an example. I was at Arby's like a month ago, mm-hmm. right? Haven't been to Arby's in forever. My wife really likes it. So we go through the drive-thru, and I get this chicken sandwich thing that they have specialized on their menu. And I always eat my fries before I eat my sandwich, right?
I can relate to that.
Yeah, because you can't, you know, like once fries get cold, that's the end mm-hmm. of it, you know?
Yeah.
So I always eat my fries first. But anyway, so I'm eating my fries, wife's eating her meal. I give them my fries, go to open my sandwich up, and they have made me a chicken sandwich without the chicken breast. So it has
all the ingredients except
all for the ingredients. So it's just a bun and tomato and lettuce and the mayo and the bacon, but there's no actual chicken patty. And I found it funny, and I chuckled. My wife got very upset.
Right.
And my thought was, we're all human beings. Mm-hmm. We can all make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm going to go around this drive-thru again, tell them that they forgot. They're going to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get my sandwich. And now I have a story to tell at the next party I go to mm-hmm. with the family. I can say, hey, you know, something funny happened to me. Yeah. And I get the shit.
Were you ever served a fixin' sandwich?
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't know. It's things like that that I'm just like, you know, you just got to laugh. You got to find the positive and I don't know, take advantage of it, because it's like there's so much negativity and it's just not, it doesn't help at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, I think that there's a huge chunk of people who need that. Like, that's the program that they're already in, that they've always been in, and they won't know how to get out of it. I think that it's like, I think that being upset is ingrained in some people's like personality and their identity. They really need it because that's what they've always done. Their serotonin levels, their cortisol, all that stuff is all based around that, and they need that reaction from their brain. They need those chemicals to fire off for them to like
function,
be able to wake up in the morning and go to sleep at night. That's like part of it all.
It's I don't know, man. I just find that it's just the chemicals feel better when you're happier and when you're positive. And no matter what it is at the instance, just find the positive and you're going to feel lighter.
Mm.
It's just what I found. So I've definitely adapted it even more to my life nowadays, more so than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Are you have a brand new lease on life, knowing how much time and energy can be wasted now that you've experienced the almost having that ripped away from you, that type of thing. Would you say that like what you recently went through was like a fear thing? Did you have that? Did you have the fear going into all that?
I did. So for anybody who doesn't know, you know, I had a cancer diagnosis, and I had to have a pretty extensive surgery in order to get it removed, and it definitely was scary, and I'm glad that the doctors didn't tell me how bad it actually was until I was already there,
mm.
because knowing me, I would have pushed it off further,
Mm-hmm. And you also do tons of research on stuff. You're somebody who's like, oh, I'm going to go crazy hard on researching this. Yes. You would have scared yourself probably even more on that.
Yeah. I'm definitely one of those, and paralysis by analysis, kind of people. And yeah, I would have. And again, knowing me, I would have put it off further. And who knows how much worse would it got? Because apparently it got really fast at the end there. Mm. So, it might have been a different story. So, luckily, they were able to get it all out. Mm. Close me up. And I have about, two foot long, stitch, whatever you want to call it, a closing, on my ab. Yeah, a
road map on your tummy.
Yeah. Much like your...
like on my head.
On your head, but yeah. mine's probably four times as long.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm all, I'm healthy now, and it definitely was scary and it was painful. But it does feel good to know, like, one, how much support I actually have from friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, my family did something that was so cool that I literally can't wait to do for someone else. And I think I'm actually going to do this for Mr. Chuck right next door.
Because
he's getting surgery on his back later this month, I believe. So anyway, what my family did was, in my household, I do most of the cooking. Almost all of it.
Right.
But I was going to be, pretty much bedbound for a few weeks after surgery.
Yeah.
So they came up with this idea to bring my household food for a week. So basically, every single night, somebody else brought dinner for the house.
Okay.
So.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So like your siblings and your
My mom, my aunt, my aunts did, cousins, but it was so helpful.
Yeah.
And it was like, one meal.
A relief. Yeah. Like a burden that you don't have to worry about carrying.
Yeah. And it helped everyone in the household. It wasn't just me. It was everyone in the household that helped.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like something so easy for someone else to do. And it was such a big deal for me and my family. So I know Chuck is going to be down. Mm-hmm. He's getting back surgery. So he holds that household together.
Right.
So, I'm definitely going to take a couple nights on to where I'm going to feed his household, but I just thought it was a great idea, and it helped me so huge, and I can't wait to do it for somebody else.
I think, did you ever see the movie Pay It Forward?
Yeah.
It's kind of something like that. You're paying forward the kindness.
Yeah, I mean, I do that kind of stuff anyway. Like, I go to Dunkin' Donuts a lot in the morning to get coffee and stuff. And I'll just buy the person behind me, their coffee, their order,
Yeah.
It's always cheap. It's like 10 or 15 bucks. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it truly makes someone's day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about that. Like, 10 bucks is going to make someone else's day great. And then they're going to, in turn, go to work or wherever they were going happy. Mm. And even if they don't mean to spread that, they're going
to. So is it in a drive-thru line you do that?
Yeah.
When you're in the drive-thru, you're like, whoever's behind me, let me pay for whatever they're
doing. Yeah, so what I'll typically do is I'll just give a $20 bill.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give the cashier a $20 bill, and I'll say, pay for whatever the person behind me's order is, and the rest is yours.
Okay.
And, and I'll leave. Hopefully they actually do it. I don't know. I don't check.
The cashier being like, I don't know how to do that. I'm brand new. Yeah. Sorry.
I mean, usually they just tell me, they're like, oh, that's so nice. That's so cool. And, you know, and...
Has anyone ever done that for you?
Back with that movie, I did get a free meal at a McDonald's once because of it. Somebody ahead of me paid for my, you know, my meal.
I don't think anyone's ever done that for me.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Not, no, but I'm saying, you're like...
Yeah.
Like, to think about how, so far, no one's done that for me, but to feel how, like, much hope that it would give me for humanity and kindness that that you're giving to those people, you're giving to whoever's behind you,
yeah.
Going, like, oh, my God, you won't believe it, the guy. Like, they'll have that story. They just have that, like, exactly. Just like the Arby's drive-thru.
Yep. They have that story.
Yeah.
You know, and during that time with that movie, it was sort of happening a lot all over the place. And
when Pay It Forward came out?
Yeah. Yeah, it was happening quite a bit. And then, like everything else, things die off. But, you know, for me, it's simple, small acts like that you can do to make someone's day.
You know, hope and kindness should never be a passing trend. It should be a common, all-the-time theme.
Yeah, you would think. But, you know, human beings are, by nature, negative, nasty creatures. And very selfish. And it takes a lot of enlightenment to... realize your shortcomings, and then even more to actually do something about it.
Well, I think that's a little bit of pride, a little bit of ego wrapped up inside of the need to constantly be right. Everybody just needs to be right all the time. Nobody wants to shut up and just observe it.
Yeah.
Just give it space to come in and think about it and go, maybe I'm not as right as I think I am all the time.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, it's I guess what it's also what information you're always consuming. If you're consuming information that's hostile and volatile, and it's like that, like, toxic, like, I'm right all the time,
yeah,
type of sources.
Yeah.
And then you start becoming that I'm right all the time.
I mean, if you look at even, like, just the media, right? So in any other country in the world, there's news media that is just, local woman Mary planted flowers for her neighborhood. You know, that don't make the news in America.
Right.
Somebody didn't get shot, die, burn in a fire, it's not getting on the news.
It's clickbait.
Yeah.
Clickbait culture.
Yeah.
Is what
it still happens. The world is. I mean, you know, Mary is somewhere in America planting flowers for her neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But, you know, it is what it is. What are you gonna do? You know?
Well, I know what you're gonna do, and I know what I'm gonna do. Is I'm gonna continue to beat my drum, consistently be the source that I wish that, for information that I'd want to consume, the type of people who I'd want to see and listen to and watch. I'll be that type of person.
There you go. And be the change you want to see in the world. Right. Yeah. That's the saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
I also want to be the cash that I want to see in the world. Not that? Just the change.
Oh.
The
yeah. That joke went over my head for a second.
Yeah.
I just, you know, there's so much negative in in what we're seeing every day, as far as like, not you and I so much, but I guess just like the phone culture, the like what people are consuming, the swipe, yeah. swipe, watch a video for 15 seconds that outrages you a little bit, yeah, and then yeah. you share it and show yeah. it to everybody.
Yeah.
And I think that like outrage bait is what I'll call it. Mm-hmm. It's like the clickbait, but it's yeah. just outrage. It's just the...
I think that people, because it's such a release of, you know, I don't know what chemical it is, whether it's oxytocin or what, but I know that, you know, it's definitely a chemical release that people are getting, you know, with all this stuff. And, you know, it's like, I don't know, for me personally, that it's not a good feeling. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'd rather just ignore that story and try and find something else to spend my time on.
You know what? I started thinking about it this way. And I think I've told you this before, but I'm not sure. Do you remember, like, let's say, all through school, and us being from this area, everybody wore, like, Eagles stuff.
Yeah.
But then the second somebody showed up in, like, a Dallas shirt to school,
yeah.
they were automatically, asshole, asshole.
Yeah.
Like, and those people would be like, oh, when you got, oh, we got world champions. Like, yeah, it's just somebody who, like, wants to kind of be a troll or stir the pot.
Yeah.
I see that in, like, people wearing MAGA hats or Trump hats. And
yeah.
it's the same energy. And it's, I think it's just it's an adrenaline rush. It's an adrenaline rush to have an argument.
Yeah.
Like, your go-to argument is, when was your last Super Bowl? Like, yeah. that kind of thing. Or,
but, you know, like, one of my better friends is a Cowboys fan, mm-hmm. and I'm an Eagles fan.
Okay.
It does not impede our friendship at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, to me, it's playful, like, competition a lot of times. So we end up, like, busting each other's chops for one thing or another based on our likes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, and, like, one of the jokes I did was after we won this last Super Bowl that the Eagles won, I invited him over, and I have a mug of the Super Bowl champions, and it has the Eagles logo. And I ended up pouring his beer into it and gave it to him. He didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took a picture of him drinking from Super Bowl mug of the Eagles winning.
He printed it up on a t-shirt.
I sent it to everybody. I was like, look at this Dallas Cowboys fan drinking from a Super Bowl Eagles mug.
That's sneaky.
Yeah. But it was fun. He laughed about it in the end. He's like, I wonder why that beer tastes bad.
But I think, you know, I think it's a little bit of like, yeah, that same stuff with, like, we don't have to take everything so seriously.
I know, man.
We can kind of like understand that there's going to be people who are going to, what would the world be if everyone had the exact same opinions on everything?
Forget about it.
Like, everybody would be no fun. It would be no fun to talk to anybody if everybody had the same likes and dislikes as you. Like,
and personally, I love debates.
Mm-hmm.
So, somebody else whose favorite wrestler is The Rock, and then someone else's favorite wrestler is Hulk Hogan or John Cena or, you know, Stone Cold, whatever it is. I love having, like, a friendly argument over why one would be better than the other. And on any given day, anybody could have the opportunity to argue the best for any of those people. So it's not like anybody's right in that instance.
Right. Those are just opinions.
It's opinions.
Yeah.
Now, your opinion might hold more weight based on your argument that day.
Right.
You know, so make sure your game is as sharp as it can be every day so that can happen, you know? And if you lose, you lose.
Sometimes passion behind opinions come with knowing that there's influence behind what their words are. There might be some people listening. And like that might be what's different about nowadays, because like when we were younger, there wasn't social media. So like nobody was like camera ready all the time. nobody knew what it was like to sit in front of a camera and talk about stuff like that. That's a thing that happened in our lifetime.
Yeah.
Where it switched to like everyone's got a public figure. Everyone's got the idea that they're a public figure and that their opinions matter, like they're some sort of celebrity. And that happened when MySpace and Facebook happened.
Yeah.
Like before that, how often were you sitting in front of a camera?
Oh yeah, I've always been the I've tried to shy away from cameras my whole life.
Right, you're the behind the camera guy.
Yeah, I'm definitely a behind the camera guy. You know, the even when I was a kid. Everyone else in the family was taking pictures for like Christmas. I'm hiding. I'm on the steps. I'm in the garage. I'm hiding behind the house. You know, they're like, "Where's baby Steve?" And I haven't seen him in a year. And I'm just hiding behind the tree, hoping that nobody finds me.
And you know, you get a signal for when it's time to hide because you hear the film. When they're winding it back up, then you know that's time to run.
Yeah, but I think that's, you know, when it comes to like the movies and stuff, is like, you know, why I'm still the guy behind the camera directing and instead of, you know, being in front, I don't have that that personality or that energy, that outgoing kind of vibe. You know, much more, you know, behind the scenes and let me orchestrate stuff, you know. Speaking of, have you done any movies lately? You're still waiting for me to finish 10%.
No. I wouldn't say I'm waiting for anything. Nothing's really come up.
It's all wrestling stuff, right?
Well,
doing a lot of wrestling.
I was supposed to do. Do you know Amel Figueroa?
No.
Oh, he's. I did something with. Do you know Brandon E. Brooks?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did something for him.
Oh, is that All for Nothing or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I haven't done much since then. I don't know, what was that? A couple years ago, no.
Oh, did they finally release it yet?
In festivals and
stuff.
Yeah,
I knew they were close.
Because I knew that the writer, director guy, Frank, had passed away.
Yeah.
So, it might have delayed its release.
Yeah.
It might have.
Well, I mean, you know. It takes 2 years to make a movie now, man. It does, especially independent movies.
You know what's weird about the movie, man? About that, Not For Nothing, it's called. The weird thing about the movie is it's kind of like a opioid crisis. It's kind of like that's the
theme.
The theme, like the underlying narrative of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how he died, and I don't want to speculate or anything. But my last conversation with him was him asking me for people I know who may have passed due to the opioid crisis, and I gave him some names, and he was like, "Oh yeah, I knew Mike Verdi." Like we talked about it back and forth, and. And like he gathered that stuff for me, and I'm like, now he was gathering those names. Now I'm wondering if he's gonna be one of the names in that list in the credits at the end of the movie.
Yeah,
and that's bizarre to think about.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's usually people make movies that touch them, that you know, sort of move them, inspire them. I personally don't. Mm. You know, I my intention is
more escapism, more of like a it doesn't have to be something that touches home.
No, it doesn't. And I typically I want to learn, you know, with every movie I make, I want to do something that I hadn't done before, and you know, try to find a way to grow. And you know, that's why I'm having the hardest time with the you know, the sequel to 90% is you know, I'm not very well suited, well versed in sci-fi. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of sci-fi elements that are going into the concept. Mm-hmm. And you know, just you know, having a hard time, and just getting done Crystal Lake, and you know, that whole couple years, you know, is finally coming to fruition, and you know, winding down and finishing all that up. Yeah. is pretty cool.
So it's like the process of one has to end before the process of another really kind of begins.
I mean, without lack of a better word, yeah. I mean, for me, it seems like once I get spread too thin, I'm not really giving any gems. Mm. Until I'm like 100% behind one thing. Yeah. It's like a slick laser. If it's not focused, it's not really a laser. It's just scattered light. Mm. But once you focus all that light into a laser, it can do some damage.
What the fractal?
Yeah. I got that joke.
Yeah, I think it's so true with like anything though. Like, I think the same thing you would tell your kids when they were little. You were like, finish what you're eating before you can get up and go do something else.
Yeah.
Right, so it would be like, yeah, I'm gonna clean. I guess you're when I was a kid, when we were little, they'd say clean your plate.
Yeah.
So clean your plate, and you want to clean your plate before you go refill your plate.
Yeah.
Or go play video games.
Yeah. Or whatever. Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah. But I'm always, you know, I'm always trying to learn, and I'm trying to grow, and it's not always the easiest thing, and you got to find motivation, you got to find inspiration, and you know, sometimes it comes just, you know, pounding on your door, and other times you got to go digging to find it, you know.
So when you were recovering from the surgeries and stuff, and you had that, like, what, you had like a pressure
thing? Yeah, on, so they
put a,
yeah, it was a thing they called a binder. Mm. It basically holds everything in place.
Did your big excited dogs ever mess it up? Did they hurt it at all?
So we pretty much kept the dogs away from me. Mm. During that time period.
Right.
They would come to a baby gate that I have in the house. Mm. And you know, I basically came close enough so they could, you know, smell me and give me kisses and that kind of stuff. And I did that every day. Mm-hmm. But they pretty much stayed away because we didn't want, you know, more damage. I mean, you have 200-pound dogs who are excited to see you. Mm-hmm. They're going to jump on you.
Would you be at risk of ripping a stitch by yelling at them?
I don't know.
Like exerting that.
Hey, that's the stuff. Yeah,
right.
I mean, probably.
Right.
I didn't really have the energy in me at the time. I mean, nobody could sort of believe that I was sent home. You know, a couple days after.
Right, and also like, this is. Could have been an excuse, not an excuse, but this could have been a situation where, you know, sometimes you get overprescribed or something like that. Like this would definitely be the type of procedure where, like, they go, hey, take this pill, take two of these pills, and then
So yeah, so I'll tell you all about that. So in the hospital, I have a big fear of becoming addicted. I feel that I have an addictive personality. Mm. I abused alcohol at one point in my life. Mm. I still use it, but I don't abuse it. Mm. But at one point I did. I used to smoke cigarettes, mm. you know, for a long time.
Yeah, so, I remember that.
Yeah, so I have that fear, and I definitely don't want to. I didn't want to use opioids. Mm. And while I'm at the hospital, they're asking me about my pain level. Mm. And I found out that from one of the nurses, they were like, we have oxycodone for you if you need it. Mm. If you ever say your pain level is above a 7, that's what they're going to give you. Mm. So every day, regardless of where my pain actually was, I would just tell them, oh, I'm like a 4 or 5, mm-hmm. even if it's a 9, because I don't want them to give that,
right.
You know, it was Tylenol every 4 hours, it was ibuprofen every 4 hours, and I just had to suck it up. And then I remember one of the nurses came in one time, and I asked her for an extra ibuprofen. Mm-hmm. And you know, she handed me my little cup with it, and I look at it and it looks different, and I'm like, what is this? She's like, oh, that's 5 milligrams oxycodone. I'm like, I don't want that. I asked you for ibuprofen. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, okay. And she put it back, and I'm just sitting there thinking, I'm like, man, it's like, if I just didn't look.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and at the trusted healthcare provider, like, yeah. That's somebody who you asked for something and then they gave you something?
I asked for a very particular thing. Mm-hmm. I said, can I have an ibuprofen? Mm-hmm. And the answer was yes. And then she handed me an oxy.
Right.
It's not an ibuprofen.
That's a slippery slope.
Yeah. So, thank God I looked.
Right.
And it sucked. The pain sucked. It really did. But I made it through. And, you know, I had tremendous help once I got home with, you know, my wife and my son helping with the dogs. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'm better, I'm grateful, and I'm happy. Like I said, waiting with bated breath to pay it forward to my buddy Chuck.
Mr. Chuck. It's funny that you still call him that. That's just what you made your girls call him when they were little.
Yep.
That's so funny.
He laughs. I actually call him, like, I scream whenever I see him. I'm like, Chucky boy! And he laughs because anybody else calls him Chucky, mm-hmm. he'll fight you. He'll shoot you. He's packing.
He sure is. He's one of those dudes you would see him pull a gun on somebody.
He's in the military. He was in the military, yeah. And 100% of the time, if he is out of his house, he has a gun on him. Mm. And if you call him Shuggy, he will shoot you.
Dude, you know what I've been thinking about a bunch lately, and I should maybe repay him this. I was outside changing my tire out front, and I had a little crappy tire iron. My tire iron stunk. And he went into his garage and came back out and handed me a tire iron. And I put it back in my trunk after I changed my tire. And I never brought it back to him. I'm like, oh, bro, I got to give him a tire iron back.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
Dick move.
Yeah, get it back to him. Yeah. So, we'll see. You, I got that event. Did I send you the link? Okay. Crystal Lake, October, Friday the 13th. Yeah. Emily, one of the girls who worked on...
I know her.
Yeah, she worked on a movie. Uh-huh. She had said we should do the premiere on Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a brilliant thing.
It's marketing.
So, yeah, so I was like, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, let's find a way and do it. And, you know, I ended up renting Pensbury Auditorium. They just had, like, a new rebuild.
Okay. I didn't know the venue. I didn't know what venue it was. But I saw the invitation, but I didn't
So it's Pensbury Auditorium, holds 950 people. I'm going to cap it at 500 mm-hmm. people. So no more than half full. And but apparently it just got a rebuild, like a $4 million rebuild in 2020.
Mm.
So top of the line projector, beautiful new screen, new seats, new everything.
They must have felt like such bums to be rebuilding a thing for people to assemble in a year and a time when people couldn't assemble.
Well, I mean, it was a school. It's for a school.
Okay.
But in the same sense, you know, screw you to all you movie theaters out there, because I can't tell you how many I called to rent.
Mm.
And, you know, they basically want to charge me three times what they would normally get for that seat to have me show my movie in that same theater.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to go see, I don't know, what stupid movie is out right now?
I want to go see the Ninja Turtles movie.
Okay, so Ninja Turtles, right? You want to see that one, but that's what? It's going to cost you $18 to get in? Yeah. Well, if I rented that theater for you to watch Crystal Lake, it would cost me $40 to rent that seat for you to come in and watch it.
Oh, okay.
Well, how the hell am I supposed to get $45
right.
from a person to watch a movie that I made, you know, independently?
So you're just digging yourself deeper into a hole.
Yeah. I was like, and they weren't the only one. It was it was pretty much across the board.
Mm.
And anyone that was actually like semi reasonable was booked years in advance. So good for them, you know, but shame on you to the Regals, the AMCs, you know, all those theaters. And then some theaters, they just don't give you the option of renting on a Friday or Saturday night, even a Sunday night.
Hmm.
They're like, I'll rent you a theater on Tuesday morning. It's like, yeah.
When everyone else is at work?
Yeah. It's like, how the hell, you definitely can't fill the theater Tuesday.
Right.
You know, how the hell you want me to get somebody to show up Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock?
Right.
You know, get 200, 300 people to show up. Mm-hmm. It ain't going to happen, you know? So again,
there isn't people who do it. Like, I don't think, is there people who show their movies in Regal Cinema? Like just a showing of the movie?
Yeah. I went to one for Alpha Rift. Dan Lance, his friend, he was the one who wrote and directed it. And he rented it for us to watch it for the cast and crew and stuff. And he paid quite a bit of money to rent that out. And it's like, it's one thing if you're losing something of it, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have, you know, back when the Infinity Wars was in theaters, it was selling so many hundreds of millions of dollars. Every screen was sold out, every single showing of the day. If I'm asking to rent that theater on that day, I understand you saying, no, I'm not renting you the theater, okay? But when you only have a stupid show that nobody's going to see, I'm prepaying for that theater.
Here's an idea. So a movie that breaks to $1 billion in the box office, let's say Barbie,
yeah.
right? Go to, like, opening night of Barbie when the movie ends and the lights all go up. You come out and you go, nobody go anywhere. We're showing my movie
now. Yeah. That's not a bad idea. We didn't have ushers, you know, getting us all out of there to clean up the popcorn.
Right. Hey, don't anybody go anywhere. I know you just saw Barbie and you're all feeling good and glowy and stuff. Watch this murder. Watch this murderous horror movie.
Well, here's the other thing, too, is like a couple of friends told me about other theaters that show, you know, smaller films.
Mm-hmm.
So I reached out to them and almost none of them responded, first of all. But the ones that did, very snooty and sarcastic, are talking about numbers that are like $4,000 for one showing. Essentially 2 hours of time.
Mm-hmm.
And there they will sell popcorn and soda and candy to the people that I have sold tickets to. So they get that income.
Right.
I'm paying $4,000 up front for the seats, and now get this. You want to know how many seats they hold? 66 people in a theater.
That seems like a big old ripoff.
That seems like a lot of money for 66 people to watch a movie on your theater. I was just blown away with the numbers, and I'm sitting here, I'm like, you wouldn't get close to that number if you're showing Oppenheimer.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you getting so much because you're showing Crystal Lake?
Right.
Stop taking advantage of, you know, small independents. These are independent films, people that need support, people that need, you know, bigger venues, you know?
Right.
And as soon as I get the opportunity to buy some, you know, land or building or something that has that option, I'm telling you, I'm going to open the theater and I'm going to rent to all the independents.
So, Regal and AMC are going to charge you $4,000 to show your movie to an audience of 66 people.
Yeah.
I'll charge you $3,000.
Well, there was, you know what, there was one theater up near the Poconos. It's called the Roxy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a low-budget theater anyway. It's beautiful, by the way. But it holds 450 people.
Mm-hmm.
And they only charge $3 a ticket to go see Barbie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, $3. That's unheard of. But they will rent out for independent films really cheap. The problem is it's only on off time.
Okay.
So you can't do Fridays, you can't do Saturdays, can't do Sundays.
Mm.
The rest of the week, you can work things out.
Mm.
And he's realistic price-wise, but again, who's coming on a Tuesday?
Have you ever been to the one on Sansom Street in Center City?
Like, I don't think so.
It's called the Roxy. It's like right next to Helium Comedy Club.
Okay.
And they're just a real independent small theater, and I saw something there, but it was cheap. It was cheap, and it was little.
Yeah. I remember I used to go to the Dollar Movie. It's somewhere near, or I don't know if it's still around, but it was somewhere in this vicinity.
Because
I remember, like, actually, I went to see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles there.
I think $1. Franklin Mills did $4 movies.
I mean, your feet back stuck
when,
to the floor.
Back when The Dark Knight came out, I saw The Dark Knight for $4 at Franklin Mills.
Okay.
I know. There was this place in Feasterville that I used to go to when I was young, real young, called the Eric Theater. And tickets, you get $3, you see a movie, and you got unlimited free popcorn and soda.
Was it near Mooresville?
No, it was down by like where
So Fairly Sells, like Chivos?
Yeah, so like okay. I think it's now it's like Brunswick Zone. It's like a Bolero or something that used to be
Bolero. Yeah,
that used to be a movie theater, and I used to go there. Like we'd go there Friday and Saturday and Sunday and see like everything. I remember seeing like Forrest Gump there when I was a kid. But it would be movies that came out like 6 months ago. Like, movies that weren't really, like, first-run movies in a theater anymore.
Right,
so
right.
It would be, like, you know, a couple months late.
It's the second run.
Right.
Yeah. You know, most movies have, like, the rule is, like, 6 weeks. So, like, when you initially put your movie in the theater, you know, 90% of the ticket sales are going to the studio for the first 6 weeks. And then it reverts the other way around to where it's like 80-20 for the movie theater from week six, you know, on. And that's why movie theater movies put so much money into opening weekend, because they essentially want to get all their money back.
Right, right.
During that opening run. That
marketing budget goes to like, go out and see it right now.
Right now. And then they push it hard for a month,
right,
and then all of a sudden it goes away because they don't care anymore. Now it's the theater's turn to make their money, and everyone has already seen it.
I think I saw Angels in the Outfield at that movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a timestamp on when that was. It was probably the very early 90s.
Okay.
And I was in elementary school.
Well, I think that was the thing, because that was probably a similar time to what I was talking about, but it was a different theater, because the theater I was referring to was somewhere in Mooresville-ish area. Mm-hmm. And I just remember that it was a small theater. It was literally $1 for the ticket. It was a couple of bucks for unlimited popcorn. You know, they gave you your little your thing and you could refill it as many times as you want it. And like I said, theater, it was, you know, a bit outdated and your feet stuck to the floor, but you're watching a movie for $1.
But you have sticky shoes, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Just don't take your shoes off. You have sticky socks.
So I'm hoping that you know, I feel like, you know, when we did the event for 90%, you know, I felt that was a win for everybody involved. I think that, you know, the people that came out to watch the movie enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I think they got something out of it.
Yeah.
You know, the Q&A afterwards, I think, was an experience.
Yeah.
So I think that I'm hoping to build on that similar experience and just go a little bit bigger. Last time we did, we rented a, you know, it was a hotel conference room or something.
Right, right.
So this time renting an auditorium, you know, it's like a step up, you know? Yeah, so I'm hoping that it translates into the same kind of feelings for the audience and experience things that you just can't get. Like when you go out to watch Oppenheimer, you know, Christopher Nolan is not there to answer questions that you have. You know,
you can pretend like he is,
yeah, but you won't get the actual answers. I know. So I mean, I think that is a feature, you know, when audience actually get the ask you a question about why'd you do this, or what were you thinking about with this character, or, you know, whatever. I think that adds to their level of enrichment of that experience, you know?
What's a question that you've never been asked that you've wanted to be asked?
I have no idea. I don't really think about, like, what I haven't been asked. Because I just try to answer, you know, what is asked, and most times it's, you know, things I did a poor job of expressing, you know, in the movie, you know, like it's stuff that I got.
Somebody asks you a question and you're like, damn it, that's the thing I hope they didn't notice. Yeah.
Well, there are things that I can't believe that nobody noticed. Right. You know, I remember in 90%, our main villain went to the Caribbean, and he got burnt. He was like, he's an Englishman, and bright red, burned all over himself. And 90% all takes place in one day.
Right.
So how did this guy all of a sudden get burnt to a crisp? You know, and then, you know, another scene, and not one person ever, ever has asked me how that happened.
Well, I didn't notice it.
And you were in it.
And I was there. Yeah, I was there the whole time.
So it's just, it's one of those amazing things that, you know, I love that, you know, I knew about and I flipped out. And
color correct it.
I mean, we did what we could, but I mean, it was clear as day. It's like he is a white Englishman. And then during this one particular day of shooting, he is lobster red. You know, and we did a good job of hiding it and color correction and things like that. But it's there. It's there if you look.
No one noticed it.
Yeah. I'm not saying nobody noticed it. No, I'm saying nobody has ever mentioned it. Mm. Nobody has ever asked me about that particular thing, you know? Because everyone always points stuff out in movies. Oh, they were wearing a different shirt. Or they were, that cigarette was longer. Or that drink was taller. Or, you know, whatever.
There isn't enough blood in that scene. Yeah, there would have been
more blood. There was so much blood in this one and not enough in that one. Yeah, so it's one of those things that just, it made me laugh and at the same time makes me feel good because they were so engulfed in that story that maybe their brain just overlooked it. Mm-hmm. You know, and they just
they
subconsciously forgave it because they were so enthralled.
Suspended their disbelief.
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully they can do the same for Crystal Lake.
just a quick couple more things, and then I'll send you off into the sunset with a hot dog and a handshake. So we've done this before, this segment, and I'll do it again because I don't know how many other people's podcasts you're doing, but...
None. Okay.
So, audio time travel. Do you remember me doing that with you last time?
No.
Okay. So, basically, I'm saying, this recording, this episode, it's outliving us.
Right.
It's outliving us. So, someone's coming across this exact recording in 2043... It's 20 years from now, and they're listening to it, going like, "Oh, I want to hear the timestamp, some messages from this time period, directly for me from Steve Dodson." What are those messages? You're speaking to your daughters. You're speaking to your kids.
I would say, be nice. You never know what demons somebody is fighting, and small act of kindness could truly save their day, their month, their year, maybe even their life. So be nice, be happy, find the positives in any situation because it's there. You just gotta look. I guess that's it for right now.
Okay. Is there anything, cause like I said, this is on the record. This is all stuff that's on the record. And I love to have the opportunity to just say to you on the record, like stuff that's going to outlive us, that's going to continue on. And maybe I can listen back to it in 5 years and be glad I was able to put that on the record and have that conversation with you.
Yeah.
I wanted to tell you how much I appreciate you, how much I love you, how important you are as a part of my life, an important friend that I've had somebody who's been like family to me, and I've always appreciated that. I've always very much appreciated that. And I wanted to give you the chance to ask me anything you want to ask.